Yvette Itu.
Here.
Bruce Rinker.
Here.
Dan Moore.
Here.
Three members are present, which constitutes a quorum.
All rise.
Pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Okay, we go to the minutes of the February 20th, 2025 meeting. Can I get a motion to approve those minutes?
So moved.
Seconded.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Okay, we next have the financial report. Wade.
Thank you, Commissioner. Dave's going to pull up the PowerPoint. This won't be a long presentation. We're only 2 months in, but I did want to highlight a few things as this is coming up.
These mics are live.
Okay, great.
Is that powered on, Mike?
It's powered on. Yep, pop forward. Awesome. Thanks, David. Commissioners, just to highlight a few pieces of information that were in your packet. First, you'll see, let me see if I can find my pointer. The first number that's highlighted is the property tax at the top in yellow, and that's just due to timing. We've mentioned this a couple times. The second half collection didn't end till about the end of February, February 20th. We'll get our final settlement, which we got in March. So once we get to the end of March, next month, everything will be trued up. The state was late in getting reduction factors and appraised value, assessed values back to all the counties. So that delayed things. The county had to move the collection date back from, usually it's in January, this year was in February.
What are the projections though?
What's that?
What are the projections?
Projections are, we're going to be about where we were. We're not seeing a lot of growth, but we're going to be about where we were. And we're trying to just get our hands around why aren't we growing as much as I thought we would, and many people thought we would in Cuyahoga County. I mean, it's just, it's not happening right now. The other thing that I highlighted, that looks way out of whack. That's because we had three payrolls in January. We'll have three payrolls in March. It'll true itself up. It's rare that you get three payrolls in January, but just so happened that we had three payrolls in January this year. So that you can see the February number looks more consistent, but on a year-to-date, it's off $4 million. And then the last thing, this will carry through, but we did have some major construction projects. You might go $5.4 million. What was that spent on? $3 million was Primate Forest. $500,000 was Hinckley Dam. $300,000 was the Heritage Boat Docks. $250,000 was the Sailing Center. That right there is just over $4 million. And then we had a number of smaller projects.
How much was it? How much was the Sailing Center again?
The Sailing Center, we spent $250,000 this month on that, or in the month of February.
Yeah, I see.
And then we had smaller projects like the Manikiki Clubhouse Roof, which was $133,000. We were taking care of the parking lots at the lakefront. It just all added up. We had a lot of projects. I thought if you saw that, you might wonder what that was. But the big driver is the Primate Forest, which was $3 million. So then as you jump forward with the zoo, last month, you might wonder why that's negative. That actually showed up last month. Artistic holiday design, we had to pay them out for Wild Winter Lights. We take all the revenue in, then when we pay them, we reduce revenue. It's just, we're on a cash basis. That will correct itself as we go forward, but that's why that's negative. Again, I highlighted this in blue. It's the timing due to payroll. And then I also just wanted to bring this up. We mentioned it last month, but $3 million year to date and restricted revenue. You might remember me mentioning last month, we got $2.95 million from the Zoological Society. And that showed up in last month's report, so it's in the year to date. But the zoo's about right where we thought it would be. A theme you'll hear me talk about is just the weather, and it comes up especially in golf as we go to the next page, and I'll give you some highlights. Accountants, a lot of times we like to know the why. You can see the month to date is down $273,000. It's down year to date. And quite simply, here's the facts. In golf, in 2025 year to date, we've had 292 rounds of golf played. Last year through this same time, we had 7,918 rounds of golf played. It's just, it's the weather. When I pulled it up from December 1st to February 28th of this year, accountants, we like to know these weird things, 57 of the 90 days had snow or some form of participation. In those 3 months, 57 days. If you looked at the prior year, it was 37 days. I don't even want to tell you how many sunny days, because in the month of February, we had what would classify as two sunny days. Last year, it was 15 sunny days. It's all weather-driven. We've just had real tough weather, and that impacts not just the golf course, but obviously you might have less visitors at the zoo. It's just been tough weather for us. So we'll go ahead to the next one. I didn't highlight any of the individual golf courses. I'm sure you saw the numbers. They're all lagging. As I just pointed out, it's due to the weather. I did want to talk about Enterprise because this came up last month, and it might have generated a question. I highlighted the boat dock rentals, and that's because, if you'll remember me, you'll see year-to-date, we're pretty close. You may remember me mentioning last month that we had a lot of boat dock rental in January, and I mentioned that in the prior year, it hit in February. It was just a timing of when those revenues came in. But the majority last year were in February. The majority this year, we already had them in hand. So you can see the year-to-date is pretty close. Otherwise, Enterprises...
Are we full on the docks?
I think we're pretty close to full.
Yeah, okay.
The only one I would point out, our largest one, you can see Merwin's is running pretty consistent with where it was, even though it's been real tough weather. Their operating surplus right now is pretty close to where we were. Otherwise, all of the other Enterprise operations are down slightly from where they would have been. Again, I attribute all that to weather. People are just not going to be out doing things outside, just can't be outside when 57 of 90 days in the last 3 months had snow on the ground, snow in the air, or they were wet and damp and raining. And that, commissioners, is all I had. I apologize. It's a very brief report. There's just not too much to talk about right now. We're 2 months in. The weather's been horrible, and so we're just seeing it in our numbers. And in the last few years, I've usually lauded how well golf's done. And this year, they're a product of bad weather. But I'm hopeful. We did take a look at the rounds played through March, and we're seeing a lot of good days. A lot of golf courses are having $1,000 days, and people are out playing golf again. But then it rained today. But otherwise, the weather's been getting better. It's been getting warmer, and people have been getting out. Are there any questions about the information that was in the pack?
Nope. Okay.
So, thank you.
Just as a highlight, the chalet actually had a record year. So
that is true.
There's always this, you know, yin and yang. And so we've had days when golf courses have been open and the chalet has been open. So, you know, we are a very weather-dependent business. The very first action item is the 2025 budget adjustment number 2. Wade?
Thank you, Brian. Commissioners, you will see on page 9 budget adjustment number 2. It's in the amount of $1,822,261. The detail for that is on pages 42 through 44. I did want to point out that the largest part of the adjustment is for capital construction expense. That is $1,420,946. And those projects, you may wonder, it's the West Creek Greenway. We had a Federal Highway Administration Program grant that was passed through from ODOT for $281,000. We had the Valley Parkway Bridge, $458,000. Again, Federal Highway Administration pass-through program from ODOT. We had $500,000 for the Hawthorne Parkway Bridge. Again, pass-through from the Federal Highway Administration, ODOT. And we had $190,000 adjustment at the Baldwin Creek Dam. And that was due to the sewer district's stormwater management reimbursement of funds. So all of these adjustments are related to grants or reimbursements. So I would ask your approval of that budget adjustment number 2 for $1,822,261.
So moved.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
The next action item is Club Metro 2020. 5 financial request. Charlie and Angelique have done an amazing job keeping our employees active and appreciated through a wide variety of different events that they work through. They have been audited. This continues to be something that the Metro Parks has supported as an in-kind back and forth. They do an amazing job throughout the year with hay rides and toboggans and all sorts of different things to keep our employees engaged and active. The recommended action falls on the bottom page of page 10 to continue the support from the Cleveland Metro Parks to our Club Metro organization.
Brian, can I just ask a question? So at $10 million plus $8 million, is that what
I apologize. That's $10,000 plus $8,000.
Okay. Oh, okay. Okay. Yeah.
Sometimes my eyes are
rip roaring time.
No question. Thank you.
Understood. Recommended action falls in the bottom portion of page 10.
So moved.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
The next is the revised investment policy adoption. This may be a tag team, Wade, Rose.
Go ahead, Wade.
Thank you, Rose. Yeah, on page 11, Commissioners, you'll see that we're updating our investment policy. We did it 5 years ago.
Or less than 5 years ago.
The last, you're right, the last time we did it was 2 years ago. We're at a minimum to do it every 5 years. We're doing it after 2 years. We've hired an investment advisor to help us kind of look at cash flow and manage funds. One of the things they did is looked at the policy, and they found some areas where we weren't 100% consistent with the Ohio Revised Code. So this is more wordsmithing and making us consistent with what's in the revised code. It gives me no additional investment authority, subjects us to no additional risk. There was one part that might be a little confusing where item D, which is on page 305, talks about credit risk and identifying that we will not invest in anything that's not rated at least AA or higher. That actually is picked up in another part of the revised code. So it was duplicative. So we tried to just clean it up. All this does is bring us in 100% compliance with the Ohio Revised Code in terms of how we invest funds.
Wade, can I ask a question? So a lot of times people have a spread out costs coming in. They'll have an opportunity to get a rather high, good quality, higher interest rate on something that goes out in time. And it may be 8 years or something like that. You're not allowed to do that, are you?
We're limited on how far we can go out. We can ladder out, and we are laddered out a little bit because we're looking, one of our big expenditures will be projects related to the rainforest and knowing what's going to come due in 2 years or 3 years. So those monies, we'll push those out. But we also know that we have some immediate needs, so those will be invested at 12 months or less.
Yeah, yeah. So what's the longest investment, the longest security that you have?
That we have in our portfolio is 3 years. So yeah. The first we got is 3 years.
Keep in mind, we only have a 10-year levy.
So yeah, I was just going to say we're limited by the
10-year. We're limited by that and the way the tax collections come of how we actually can meter out to make sure that we meet our financial obligations.
Yeah. Okay. What if you could go a little further out, how much more could you make?
You might pick up 20 basis points, 30 basis points. The yield curve's kind of funny right now, and you saw the Fed just held rates steady, which as terrible as this sounds, it's bad for a home buyer, someone wants to borrow, but that actually helps someone like us that's a government because it kept the rates a little bit higher for us. So our investment earnings will stay steady.
Yeah, okay.
But it's not a big gain to go out 5 years. I think 2 to 3 years is probably the sweet spot.
Okay, thanks. That's all. Thank you very much.
Recommended action falls in the middle of page 11.
Move the motion.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
The next is adoption of revised multiple policies. Rose?
Thank you, Brian. These two policies are up for review because it's the five-year anniversary, and pursuant to our bylaws, we take a look at our policies and look for improvements. And coincidentally, the first policy, processing requests for public records, we did have a change in the budget bill in the state of Ohio that was passed in late December, which did allow for the collection and the recovery of actual costs that it costs us to produce video documents. And this is a nice relief because the number of requests that it come in from members of the public and sometimes to just be fuel for their clicks on their social media accounts has really burdened a lot of police departments around the state. So we have gone through a very meticulous process to determine actual cost. And of course, there are limits on what we can, caps on what we can charge. So we are mindful of those. So the processing request for public records, the biggest change there is incorporating that new provision in Ohio law. And then also looking at the cost for the paper and the other items, we held those constant. We did a check, and those were good. The only cost we increased was on the CDs. So we moved that to $3 instead of the $1. And then the second policy is the electronic execution of contracts, instruments, and documents. As you recall, this was a policy that served us well, particularly during COVID. But this really, you know, moving towards electronic signatures is really the streamlining of most of our legal documents and instruments. And so this policy continues to serve us well as we move into the future. And you'll see the minor updates to this policy include specifically the digital signature definition, which is a subset of electronic signatures. And we also have included the provision requiring, when we're, again, we're doing business online much more frequently, and we built in the requirement of the click wrap or click through requirement so that we can make sure we have an actual contract for those services or products that folks are purchasing online. And I want to thank all of the staff who helps with the review of these policies and bringing their expertise to making the best policies they can be. So those are in front of you for consideration. Any questions?
Yeah, Rose, $3 for a CD. Did I misunderstand that?
Yes.
So you don't have overhead in that at all?
So that's right, Commissioner. With respect to our paper records requests and requests that we give on CDs, we can only recover the actual cost of the material, not labor. So that is why it is different for video records. In the video records, we can recover the hours of our personnel to redact and prepare those video records, but not other records.
But $3 doesn't anywhere near the cost.
$3 for the CD.
It's just for the actual physical disc.
Yeah,
yes,
yeah.
That's right.
Rose, you mentioned that you looked at the cost to prepare some of these documents, like the videos, and that there is a maximum cost
yes.
that you can charge. Are our costs to prepare within that maximum cost?
Yeah, so what we are charged with doing is looking at the actual cost of the personnel, looking, and they will log their time, and then the max is $750 per request for a video record. So what will happen is it depends what's being requested, what video record is being requested. We have to give an estimate to the requester, and so that they can then refine their request to say, oh, wow, that's way too much money. I only want the body cam from one officer. And then this way we can work together to, it'll be more time efficient, and then it'll be more cost effective for the requester.
And taking your car into the shop.
Yes. And the police and finance, thanks to them, they've been very diligent. We've worked together to really bullet out all those actual costs. Mm-hmm. We have a spreadsheet, a worksheet.
Great. Thank you.
Recommended action falls in the middle portion of page 12.
Move the motion.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Next is the adoption of the 2025 bylaws. This is actually something that Ohio law has changed, and this we're recommending the approval to have virtual public meeting policy. Rose?
Yes, thank you, Brian. So just real quickly, we're here with the bylaw change instead of January. We're here in March because, as Brian said, Ohio law has changed and is allowing us to adopt a policy, which is the virtual public meetings policy, which we'll see in the information item, because it's the first reading, since it's a new policy according to our bylaws. And there are notification requirements when we're going to hold a virtual meeting that are more specific. And so while we were making that change to the notification, we thought we would make a couple other tweaks if the commissioners would be open to that. We just cleaned up some of the language in Article 5, Section 5C. It specifically referred to, you know, professionals or personal services contracts. We thought that was more accurate to say all non-construction contracts, because the bylaws speak specifically to amendments and modifications to construction contracts. We felt that to be more accurate, because there was a type of contracts that were in limbo with how do we do those amendments. And so by broadening that nomenclature to non-construction contracts, we'll capture all other contracts in that process. Just real quickly, we also modified Article 5, Section 6, the sale of, other than at auction. Our threshold was so low with what we could do. It was hamstringing our staff and taking way too much time to put a $50 item on the gov.com, the online auction. With those items that are less than $2,500, and our staff did talk to multiple other public entities, $2,500 was the sweet number of it's anything below that is going to cost us more time in trying to go through that more formal process. So we are recommending that we utilize a less formal structure to sell anything less than the $2,500. And then finally, Article 8, as many of us know, insurance premiums in December, November, when we approved our insurance program, our deductibles went up, and so we have modified Article 8 to reflect the thresholds to accommodate those higher deductibles with respect to the settlement authority of Brian and myself. Those are the proposed changes to the bylaws.
Rose, on the $2,500 or less, is there a process by which you can liquidate those assets?
Yeah, it'll be less formal, and it'll be more of, you know, more of just trying to get the best price from the you know, the purchaser who has an interest in these items. Yes, we're still gonna follow the process, still try to get the best price for those items.
But you won't advertise them.
I mean, it'll probably depend what it is. Mm-hmm. I mean, we just won't be locked into having to put it into auction.
Yeah, I see. Okay.
Good.
Yeah, it makes sense.
Okay.
Recommended action falls in the bottom portion of page 12.
Move the motion.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
The next action item is authorization of land. This is the Harrison property. This is 18.4 acres in Hinckley Reservation. The real estate team has worked very hard. They use the words extensive negotiations. I think that is a very true statement. And we are very pleased to be able to bring to the board this fee simple title, acquisition of the 18.4 acres. It does buffer our ledge pool area and really re-anchors in a very, very good way part of our Hinckley Reservation. The recommended action, if there are no questions, falls in the mid portion of page 13 to do a fee simple title transfer of the 18.4 acres for the purchase price of $735.
Move the motion.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
The next is authorization to submit a grant and commit funds. This is through the Recreational Trails Program. In cooperation with the Ohio Department of Natural Resources and the Federal Highway Administration, this is a very unique project to be able to do trail work around Hinckley Lake, totaling almost 5,000 linear feet. We're going to reroute some trail. This is all going to be part of the work that we're doing relative to the dredging and the material. We're talking about how it will apply to the standards. Cleveland Metro Parks is willing to commit up to $30,000 of the 180 total. The recommended action falls in the mid portion of page 14 to submit and commit funds for this grant.
Move the motion.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
The next is Cleveland Harbor Eastern Embayment Resilience Strategy, otherwise known as CHEERS. This is an authorization we're requesting to submit an application to National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration, known as NOAA, Transformational Habitat Discretionary Grant Program, and commit match. This program still exists, and we are hopeful that it does stay. When you look at our project partners, certainly the request is $9.5 million, but Metro Parks, City of Cleveland has been a strong partner, the Port of Cleveland, for a total refined cost of $12 million. The recommended action does fall on the bottom page of middle portion of page 15, but this is a continuation of us trying to find the funds to continue the CHEERS project. At East 55th.
May I just ask one question? With all that's going on, is this vulnerable?
I would use the words, we're cautiously optimistic. Mm-hmm. We are not naive enough to think that it could or would, but it currently, in its current form, is still accepting applications. And so how we've basically handled it as administration, if it's viable and active, we will continue. There was one that we've been notified, our IMLS grant. We have understood that that program no longer exists. And so we do have a contract, but there's no agency to administer it. So at this point in time, we're going to have to figure out exactly how we will do it. We were in the process of hiring because we were under contract. So all I can say is stay tuned. We are very concerned about the $19 million for our trail system that goes from Newburgh Heights on the way down. We will be working with our folks in DC here next week to work to very much to try to preserve that transportation corridor down there. So stay tuned. Right now it's still active.
Move the motion.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
The next is a professional services agreement. This is RFQ 6910. This is the Cuyahoga Valley Bridge Rehabilitation. This is in Rocky River. This is just the professional construction inspection services, part of what we do to make sure that we're in compliance of everything. This is 158-foot span. They are already deep in the project. The recommended action to administer the professional services agreement at the Rocky River Reservation is with DLZ. We had a number of different submitters. We deemed that DLZ was highest and best to be able to administer this and the project and construction administration. Recommended action falls on the bottom portion of page 17.
Move the motion.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
The next is Amendment 2, GMP2, Contract 1746, Construction Manager at Risk. This is the old Lorraine Connector Trail. Cleveland Metro Parks continues to find ways to work trails into certain areas. I was just told of a story of an individual as a youth, 10 years old, took his golf clubs on his bike down the road and still has a scar on his leg from where he dumped his bike over and landed up against the curb. So there is a lot of enthusiasm for this particular trail and trail construction project. We did partner with the City of Cleveland, the CDCs. This is a very good project for Cleveland Metro Parks to create access on this side. And it does go into Little Met Golf Course area. The recommended action for this construction manager at risk for the next phase with Neroni and Sons along Old Lorraine Road for account not to exceed $2,077,492. Recommended action falls in the bottom portion of page 19.
Move the motion.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
The next is Irish Town Bend Project Development Agreements. This is the Lakefront Reservation, Cleveland Metro Parks and its partners that include the Port and NOACA, Land Studio, West Creek Conservancy, and a host of others. This is really what I would use the words clarifying kind of the relationships. There are certain areas that we fit the bill better to receive funding through NOACA. There are certain areas where Land Studio is being able to raise funds on the private side, but this is really working on how we're directing the spending to be able to do the Franklin Enhancement Project, which is basically Franklin Road and some of the reroute that's happening there, how we're actually codifying the relationships between all of these different organizations. Sean, anything you'd like to add? This one's probably the more complex of our partner agreements.
Great. Thank you, Brian. Good morning, Commissioners. What we're asking of you this morning is the ability to enter into what is probably multiple agreements with our partners that we've been working on Irish Town Bend now for years. Last September, when we were awarded $10.8 million through the Outdoor Legacy Recreation Program, that really solidified our involvement, not only in the trail along the riverside, but then in Irish Town Bend Park specifically. So in doing that, in receiving those funds and moving towards the contract to sign to actually solidify those federal funds, there are steps that we need to do and enter into these project development agreements with our partners so that we can show progress and then secure that money.
Sean, are you saying that this agreement is required to be able to receive the federal, to receive the funding?
Yes, the 10.8 million that was awarded requires certain parameters. One of those is a leasehold or ownership interest. So we need to enter into the PDAs, the project development agreements, first as a prior step to getting a leasehold interest for Irish Town Bend, among a lot of other agreements. Land Studio has done an amazing job of raising money for the project, so we need the ability to effectuate the expenditure of the money in execution of the specific.
And are these in the form of agreements or MOUs or?
What we typically do is enter into project development agreements, and then from that, that might spin off the specific lease or a specific sub-agreement.
Who ultimately has title?
City of Cleveland will end up with it. It's actually sitting in West Creek right now in an LLC, and eventually we believe we do not want to get ahead of City Council or the mayor, but we have been given the understanding that the City of Cleveland will be the ultimate fee holder of the area. Again, the complexity of this, I mean, there's funds that date back to Paul Alcinas's day, so this is just something that we're trying to make sure that everybody knows who's on first base, second base, third base, and who's responsible for what, and then the timelines and the dedicated work that actually needs to get done, so there's no misconceptions.
If I could add to that, City of Cleveland will hold the title for the hillside, and the port will retain the title along the riverfront.
Yeah, that makes sense. Yeah.
They'll have
it's like a right-of-way.
Yes, and they'll have the responsibility to maintain the bulkhead.
What does it look like, the Metro Parks total cost? Just the Irish Town Bend, that would be the park.
Land Studio is raising funds. We'll say that their goal is $45 to $50 million to raise. They're in the $30 to $35 million
in terms of what they've raised so far today. In terms of Cleveland Metro Parks, our own capital, our own costs being invested into Irishtown Bend, right now with the Lake Link Trail, there's about $888,000 that we are responsible for. And actually, last month, you approved the ability for us to go submit for a $500,000 grant, so that will reduce our contribution. But really, of the potentially $50 million, a lot of those funds have been raised through philanthropy and other grants and donations, and Land Studio is going to continue to do that.
It's an absolutely amazing project. It's breathtaking.
It is. I had the opportunity to be there 2 nights ago, and the port is making great progress on the stabilization project, and they're really setting the stage for everything to then follow.
Recommended action falls in the mid portion of page 21.
Move the motion.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
The next is a tabulation of award and bids. We do have some data analytics and customer data platforms. The next to highlight is the salary survey and compensation development plan. This is something that we've tried to do every 5 years. We did miss a few during COVID, so we really want to go back and make sure that we have the philosophy of mid, min, max, and so we want to try to make sure that our salary compensation across the entire organization is exactly where it needs to be. Contract lifecycle management, Seneca Golf Course, we did get positive bids for the third nine to be paved, two used Real Master mowers. Our team continues to do a good job to source used equipment that's valuable to us, Kenneco software and government consulting professional agreement. Recommended actions falls on the top portion of page 22.
I have just a couple quick questions. By the way, congratulations on the work on the contract lifecycle management. That looked like it was a lot of work for you guys. So,
yes, congrats and thank you to the entire legal department staff.
Yeah, and I did see on that there was an ability to extend it for a couple of years beyond the contract. And with the first one, the data analytics, that actually is being extended for the fourth year. And I just kind of noticed that the price for the fourth year was substantially higher than the first three. So kind of curious about that. And then as we were thinking about even the future contracts, like the management system, that do we know what those that price is, the extension price?
Yeah, I'll let Anthony speak to the data.
So those are they sort of tie in together.
Yeah, for the data analytics piece, what you see in the board report is the total amount over all 4 years. So not so the fourth year is still the same amount as the first three.
Just the aggregate.
It's just the aggregate total.
My math shows that it's like twice as much. Maybe it was a. So the first 3 years were 340, and the fourth year is 540.
So there still is a contingency. So we do build in a contingency in case we do need
That's what it is. Okay.
Go above it. So, for
maximum.
All of our,
thank you. Thank you for that, because it looked like it was double. All right.
Yep, I'm sorry. Sorry. Yeah,
sorry.
We always include a contingency in
thank
those items
that.
Just in case.
Thank you for that clarification.
Thank you.
And I just, so with that, as I was reading the one, we know what the amounts would be for the extension for that management system, right?
Yeah, so we've got the 3 years locked in, and then it'll be at our sole discretion, you know, going forward.
Awesome.
And we will negotiate that. And what we learned through the process is that these prices are very fluid. You can drive a stiff bargain, and so we will continue to approach it with that kind of conservative fiscal negotiating tactic.
Excellent. Thank you. And then one last question on the salary survey. How many positions, it's non-union, but approximately how many positions are we analyzing?
I think across the board, they will actually take a dive into the different bargaining units as well, but they will also look at the non-bargained units. So when you look at the division, it's not quite 50-50, but it's in that realm of, you know, when you look at HR and accounting.
So about
and all
half,
those,
half the positions, awesome.
Not quite, but it's in that range.
Thank you. Can we get a motion? Or?
So moved.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye. Okay.
Thank you.
Approval of vouchers and payroll.
Thank you, Brian. Commissioners, on page 39, you'll see resolution 25-03-032, listing various vouchers, wires, ACH debits totaling $13,196,178.72. All have been reviewed as to their legality and compliance with the Ohio Revised Code, and I would ask your approval of that resolution.
Move the motion.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Commissioners, on page 40, you'll see Resolution 25-03-033, and this is for payments to Arborware totaling $306.13. Again, the voucher's been reviewed to legality and compliance with the Revised Code, and I would ask your approval of that resolution.
Move to approve.
Second.
Dan Moore abstains.
Aye.
Aye. All right, I believe we are set for public comment. Marty?
Never sure if somebody else might just show up. Elephant in the room is what federal funds will be available and for what purposes. Obviously far from settled, but we deserve to hear what you expect and are prepared to do. Seems an appropriate question on the day you met with your audit committee. Certainly there are a great many policy changes in this agenda, and some seemingly make it easier to spend money while making it harder for the public to watch expenditures. Perhaps that's a feature. More latitude on change orders, reporting, etc. Doing more faster. The harder it is to keep track, the more it cries out for monitoring. Virtual meetings may offer benefits for officials. However, it's ironic that this is being instituted just as state employees must now return to their brick and mortar offices. 2 points going forward. During COVID, Metro Parks video meetings did not, as required, allow viewers to determine who was speaking. And if you can find money for a podcast studio and also to present virtual meetings, then you can certainly find the money, will, and means to post video recordings of board meetings. Cash-strapped cities manage to do it. Controlling costs is obviously a concern of mine, except when it's merely an excuse. Keeping the Rocky River Nature Center bridge open with a two-way light would have amounted to a trivial cost for Metro Parks. After I questioned whether repairs might run beyond 90 days, the sign was changed, extending completion to August. The construction contract was awarded last meeting, is underway with a required ODOT consultant up for a vote today. The contractor was chosen, start was delayed for the completion of the Cedar Point Bridge. Plenty of time to find and install the required consultant, especially as they happen to just be there on the Cedar Point job. Construction here is at best a necessary evil. Wetland protection was touted as a major reason to get Seneca. Now you're forced to buy wetland credits to mitigate the widening and repaving of 2.5 miles of asphalt cart paths. A total contradiction reflecting badly on your conservation. We can't predict how long this golf boom will last, but the damaging impact of the asphalt was surely exceeded. Haste makes waste. These uncertain times demand exceptional caution and responsibility in spending our money, whether it is recycled through the federal government or voted directly by your residents here at home. Thank you.
I'm not sure what error to start with, really, in that monologue, but I would take issue with the fact that Ms. Lesher is saying that we are less transparent and moving hastily and making waste. We are one of the best, if not the best, governmental organizations in the state of Ohio, and our awards and our audits and our acknowledgement from the state auditor prove that again and again. So as we carefully went through the policy changes and as we will carefully explain the new virtual policy, and this is the first time hearing that we weren't compliant during COVID. But again, I think that's another inaccuracy because we had the video display. Our IT department works meticulously to make sure things are functioning. Just a whole lot of half-truths and inaccuracies once again in that monologue.
Again, I think just to we enjoy the ability for the public to comment, and I always want to say it is the public's opinion. It is not necessarily according to fact. The combining of an asphalt trail to the mitigation, that's not a correct statement. The correct statement is actually part of the redesign of the last nine of the golf course. So again, there's just a continued misstatement of actual fact only based on someone's opinion. And it's very hard at times to sit here and continue to listen to the berating and badgering from an individual that continues to contradict the work that this agency, this good agency, this great agency, and the employees that work here.
Thank you. Thanks for the feedback. Any other comments? Any other public comments?
The next, we'll move into the information briefing policy items. Rose?
Thank you, Brian. Yes, so as I hinted at earlier in the agenda, this is a new policy as a result of the change in our Ohio Revised Code, allowing for us to go back to using the virtual public meeting format. And as we did see, as it worked during COVID very effectively for us to continue business, we have continued that transparency by continuing to broadcast our meeting so that folks don't have to physically come in to see the business of the Cleveland Metro Parks. They can tune in from the comfort and convenience of their home to watch all of the work and deliberations that go on here. What this does, though, what it does change for us is that if we all of the commissioners cannot attend, we could meet virtually and still carry on the business like we did during COVID. But also it allows one of you who may have a scheduling conflict where you need to be out of town, you still can participate. Your attendance virtually will be counted towards quorum and your votes will and can be recorded. So that is a very good, we believe, good policy for good government because it still allows more participation from all of our members. The one, and you know, we go just to quickly go through substantively the policy. The public will have access, will be able to observe and hear discussions and allow, since we do allow public comments, according to our bylaws, we will continue to allow public comments remotely and virtually. When we are appearing virtually, and there's kind of a gray area in the law, like if one person, one commissioner is virtual, you know, is a roll call vote required for everyone or just that person? I think we're going to err on the side of just doing a roll call vote, just so that there's no discrepancy for who is voting, you know, and how they're voting. So we will implement that procedural change when we're utilizing the virtual attendance by a board member. And then also, if a board member needs to appear virtually, they have to at least within 48 hours prior to that meeting let the president know so that we can make sure we can accommodate and have everything in place. But again, it's kind of easy since we're doing this virtually and broadcasting, so that's just kind of a pro forma matter for us. I will note that we cannot do a virtual meeting for a couple different topics. If there's going to be a major non-routine expenditure, and we define that in the policy, that cannot be handled through a virtual meeting. We also would not be able to consider the hiring of the CEO or CFO in a virtual meeting. And then finally, the proposal approval or vote on whether we're moving forward with a tax issue, AKA a levy, that also cannot be handled virtually. So I think unless there are other questions, this is the first reading. We will have, the law takes effect April 9th, but we need our second meeting, our second reading and hearing on this new policy. So the effective date of this policy will be April 17th. Any questions?
Yeah, Rose, so I see you do have a definition for it, but major non-routine expenditure and then as defined as a one-time or infrequent cost. I'm not sure really what my question is, but how do you, I'm not sure how we would define that. Can you clearly like articulate that?
So the revised code did not give us, you know, the major non-routine expenditure. So I have proposed this is a one-time or an infrequent cost. So it's the kind of anomaly of an expenditure that would come up. And what we could do is, if you come up with additional language, we could tweak that before we have the final reading and vote on the policy. But I tried to, like, as best we could, try to give more definition to that so it wasn't so ambiguous to not understand what is meant by major and non-routine.
I think
we're
going to continue to look at other agencies and kind of how they're handling it as well and try to tighten it up.
Yeah, I'm struggling with that a little bit. It looks, sounds a little vague, but
absolutely. I welcome any additional clarification, because that's what I tried to get to, too. I didn't want to leave it too vague. But I think this provides us, this is the first reading. We have the opportunity to, you know, flesh that out a little bit more and come back next time.
Yeah. Thank you.
Great. Thank you.
The next info item is the 2024 real estate report. Stephanie?
Good morning, commissioners. I'm just going to give you a brief update as we wrapped up 2024. It's a nice time to kind of look back and see where we landed with all our acquisitions. So you have the real estate report in front of you, so I will spare you, you know, super detailed explanations on each property. So we'll do a quick overview of all the properties we acquired. It's a nice time to step back, look at the big picture, see where these properties landed, what areas and we focused on. And then we start to see trends each year. So this year, I would call like the year of conservation easements. We acquired a bunch of conservation easements in three different reservations, some very strategic properties, two of which were in holdings that were fully surrounded by park property, and then some interesting conservation project areas. So once we acquire property in a region, we tend to build upon that area. So we'll hit on some of those. Update you on all our numbers, what our total acreage is by reservation, municipality, watershed. Focus on the Mill Creek Falls area. That was an important area this year. Some fun facts about each of our reservations. And then land stewardship is also a big part of what real estate does that often doesn't get highlighted in our acquisition reports. So we just always want to keep in mind that, you know, we do a lot of work on encroachments and conservation easements, deed restrictions, and then any encumbrances on our property. So any type of easements, license, leases. So that's a lot of work from our team as well that we always want to keep in the back of our minds. So this is just a quick highlight of all the properties we acquired. So you can see it's 10 different project areas, and they span, you know, across the entirety of the park district. So in the report, they're outlined by each reservation. Starting in Bedford Reservation, we have a conservation easement from West Creek Conservancy. And then if you move to Bradley Woods Reservation, we have a property we acquired from the land bank, Cuyahoga County Land Bank. Then over to Brexel Reservation and in-holding, as well as a conservation easement from West Creek. And then some private property acquisitions, both up in Euclid Creek, and then heading into Garfield Park, the Duncan property, which is on the shores of Hinckley Lake, Marlin Investment and Lakefront Reservation, a large conservation easement in Little Stream Run, and then some property that we acquired from the Diocese of Cleveland in West Creek. So you see we work with a variety of landowners, you know, from conservation partners to land banks, private landowners, and even some charitable organizations. So this is just a brief snapshot of what that all looks like. So in total, we had 13 transactions. Some of those conservation easements you saw came over in two parts, as well as the Marlin transaction was in two parts. So we totaled 13 transactions, 146 acres, and that brings our total acreage up to 25,350. So overall, we acquired over $7.8 million in land. Of that value, about $2.5 million was donated, and again, a lot of that was those conservation easements that I've mentioned. And then Cleveland Metro Parks expended over $5 million in land acquisition costs. Some of those are just very strategic properties that were available at the time, like the Marlin property, the Duncan property. So you know, we just decided that it was the time to go after those acquisitions. We preserved land in 9 reservations and 9 communities. Provided opportunities for 500 feet of future trail connections, and then lots of added natural resources, forests, wetlands, rivers, creeks, headwater streams. A lot of those were contained in the conservation easements that were donated to us in Mill Stream Run, Bedford, and Brexel. So I'm going to quickly highlight each of these acquisitions. So we acquired a conservation easement from West Creek Reservation. The city of Bedford is the underlying fee owner. This is a property that's 37 acres. It was adjacent to a property that we acquired from Maple Heights in 2022. So adds 37 acres to Bedford Reservation, really pretty spectacular property, lots of forest, wetlands, streams, tributary streams. So really a nice addition to Bedford. West Creek also donated two conservation easements to us in Brexel Reservation that totaled 29 acres. This underlying landowner is Sherrin Williams. So you can see that is the Sherrin Williams Research and Development Center, as well as the lower acres that are currently under development. And all that wooded area around the development is where those conservation easements exist. So again, adding forests, wetlands, and streams. This is a conservation easement that was donated to us by the Cuyahoga Soil and Water Conservation District, just about 71 acres in Millstream Run Reservation. This is Ridge Road here. You're in North Royalton, and the East Branch of the Rocky River runs through the property and up through Millstream. This has been a priority conservation area for us for quite some time. It's at the expansive floodplain of the East Branch of the Rocky River, Category 3 wetlands, lots of streams. So, you know, we've tried to find that connection point between these green land holdings that we own. And so this is, you know, a very nice addition to continue that connection of the East Branch of the Rocky River. And then we had two in holdings, like I mentioned earlier, that were very strategic. This is the Duncan property. So that black shape there is on Hinckley Lake. So a very popular destination for Hinckley Reservation, 2.8 acres, is the last privately held parcel on Hinckley Lake. And as you can see, it really gives us an opportunity for improved access to the lake, protecting view sheds from the lake and from the property, expanded trail connection, you know, multiple opportunities for recreation, fishing, boating, that type of thing. So very important property. We didn't want to see that flipped and developed and have something right there on our lake. So now we have full ownership surrounding the lake. And then 8700 Chippewa is in Brexel Reservation, just south of Chippewa Road. You can see the Chippewa Gorge runs right below it. So it has some very picturesque views from that property. And again, fully surrounded by Brexel Reservation. Another very strategic property is the Marlin Investment property on the Cuyahoga River. So this adds some acreage to Lakefront Reservation. This picture here is standing on the Marlin property. So you can see the views of the river, the bridges. It's quite a unique property. And it runs along the east side of the Cuyahoga River, where we would like to look to future expansion for a trail. Graincraft that we acquired is here, and it's just beyond that. So lots of opportunities there to improve our quality parks in the city of Cleveland. And then the Gable property in Mill Creek Falls. This area is home to the Mill Creek Falls. It's situated up here. There's an overlook, a very popular destination. We've assembled a number of properties in this area since the early 2000s. And this is kind of like that last remaining piece that connected the whole area. So I'll talk a little bit about that project area later in the presentation, but that was sort of the last remaining piece to connect all of that. So now I'm going to go into project areas. So the Eastern Ledge Trail was constructed in 2022, and that was following the acquisition of the Caovanian property. So that was over 60 acres in Euclid Creek Reservation. Sits right atop of the reservation, overlooking the Euclid Creek Gorge. So as we acquired Caovanian, there was a hilltop road and view drive that continued to the north, and we just took parcel by parcel by parcel. This was the last remaining property. Wilder had 4 acres that totaled 4 parcels that totaled 1.5 acres and really offers the ability to expand upon that trail and that new portion of Euclid Creek Reservation. Land bank coordination, we acquired a small 0.25 acre parcel from the land bank, but this is an area that we have continued to do this throughout the years, reaching out to private landowners as well as land banks, both city and county, to look for donations. They're little tiny parcels throughout Bradley Woods, the southeastern portion of the reservation, wet woods, unfragmented, so we just try to acquire as many of those as we can over the years. And then lastly is the Diocese of Cleveland property. So this pictured here, what used to be operated by the Diocese of Cleveland as Carmelita's House, has sat vacant for a number of years. And this roadway here is Hawthorne Drive that sits at the intersection of West Ridgewood Drive and Hawthorne Drive. This is the access point into the 77-acre former Parmadale campus. So as you can see, it's narrow, it's steep, it curves, it's not an ideal park entrance. So acquiring the neighboring property, which is the Diocese of Cleveland property here. It gives us more opportunity to expand upon that reservation and include, you know, better access. So large picture, we're at 25,350 acres. Brexhill remains our largest reservation at over 4,000 acres, followed by Millstream Run and Hinckley Reservation. We own acreage in six counties. And the communities track pretty well with the reservation. So, you know, Brexhill being a big area for acreage, Strongsill, Hinckley. But I will say, you know, those are our, you know, less developed areas. Within the city of Cleveland, we have over 1,800 acres. So I think that's the fourth largest community that we hold acreage in. So even in these more developed areas, we're finding ways to, you know, add substantial acreage, which is exciting. And this just summarizes our acreage by watershed. So we own property in these six watersheds, the largest being Rocky River and Cuyahoga River. Both of those saw the biggest expansion in 2024. And this is the Mill Creek Falls area of Garfield Park Reservation that I mentioned earlier. The Gable property is what we acquired in 2024. But this is just an example about how we kind of, you know, initially acquire some acreage and build upon it. So this area of the reservation is home to the Mill Creek Falls, pictured here. And it has continued to expand since the early 2000s when we worked with Norfolk Southern Railway, Broadview Area Housing Coalition, Slavic Village, to kind of get a footprint here. And then it was later expanded upon with an acquisition from the city of Cleveland in 2006. And then 10 years later, we were able to acquire the Simmons property, which was a grinding plant, as well as the Kanarowski property, demolish some structures. And then we expanded our lease area here in 2020. With Norfolk Southern. So we got everything pretty well combined right along the Mill Creek in the falls, but it still sat sort of behind where people didn't know it was there. So then later in the early 2020s, 2021, 2022, we got some access off of Beeman Avenue and then the Chatero property off of Warner and Turney. And then lastly, the Gable property this past year. So just
what terrace, is that a public right of way?
Yes. So it really improves the access to this area, the visibility, just a better visitor experience overall. So this was just a fun way to highlight some different facts about each of our reservations and what makes them unique and how they were created. So I'll just quickly go through them, but Acacia Reservation is our most, one of our more recent reservations created in 2012. We've only had two transactions to date to make up the 156 acres. Bedford Reservation is home to the largest acquisition we've ever acquired, which is 712 acres that we acquired in 1922. Big Creek is home to the most conservation easements, so we hold 14 conservation easements in Big Creek Reservation. Bradley Woods, as I mentioned, we've been recently acquiring small pieces, those quarter acre lots in that kind of wet wood area. Brexhill is our largest, our only reservation over 4,000 acres. Brookside used to be one of the reservations that we said we hadn't acquired anything in the recent history, but in 2021 and 2022, it saw a big expansion with the addition of Brighton Park and then a conservation easement for the Treadway Trail. Euclid Creek Reservation, as I mentioned, it grew in size by over 10% in 2019 with that Cahovanian acquisition. Garfield Park was created in 1986 through a lease with the city of Cleveland, so that just kind of shows some of our different real estate options, whether it's leases, conservation easements, fees. Hinckley Reservation is our third largest. Huntington was established with only four acquisitions, and that is the only reservation that we have not acquired land in since in the recent history, so since 1961. So one of our smaller reservations with more minimal acquisitions. Lakefront is our newest reservation, created in 2013. Millstream Run Reservation, our second largest. North Chagrin, we added a lot of acreage in recent years in the upper 40 area with three life estates, so those have since expired, and now we're all part of North Chagrin Reservation. Ohio and Erie Canal was created in 1998, and that was again through an assemblage of leases, easements, fee. Rocky River is our oldest reservation in 1919. South Chagrin is where we got our first conservation easement in 1996. Washington is our smallest reservation. It's our only reservation under 100 acres. And then West Creek was in neat partnership with the city of Parma and West Creek and established in 2006. So this is just a quick snapshot, like I mentioned, of some of the land stewardship we do. We own or hold a conservation easement over 811 acres of our total 25,350 acres, so it represents about 3% of our total acreage. We have nearly 60 acres of conservation, 60 conservation easements that total 811 acres. So we do steward these properties to ensure that, you know, the underlying landowner is upholding the terms of the easement. So that's where our stewardship work comes in. Hinckley has the largest acreage for conservation easements, and like I mentioned, Big Creek has the most. So just a quick snapshot of what that looks like is that does make up some of our land holdings.
Yep. Is there a way you can comment on how aggressive or not aggressive we need to be in those stewardship responsibilities?
Just this past year, we developed a guide, a landowner's guide for conservation easement partners. And so we're going to be sending those out just as like familiarize yourself with the conservation easement. These are some general terms. No conservation easement is really written the same.
But we're the conservation police.
A little bit, yeah. But we're trying to make, you know, a friendly relationship and going out periodically, meeting with the landowner, taking our park manager or natural resource manager. And yeah, just ensuring that they understand the terms of the easement, that they're upholding it. We do occasionally run into issues, and then we work towards a resolution.
Are the conservation easements in perpetuity?
Yes.
Do some of them ultimately get donated?
Yes. We have purchased conservation easements, and we have conservation easements that have been donated. I will say a large part of them are over more like publicly held properties, so we might hold a conservation easement over, like, for example, the city of Bedford. We do have some that are over like homeowners association properties, like the one I mentioned in Millstream Run. There are several over private properties as well. Conversely, some organizations hold conservation easements over our property. So if we work with Western Reserve Land Conservancy, for example, to partner on an acquisition, we might be the fee holder, and then they'll hold a conservation easement over it, just usually from like grant funding purposes, mm-hmm. and that type of thing. So yeah, there's a whole variety. Some permit public access, some do not. Some require staff can access it, some require staff access with notice. So they're all a little bit different.
Now, why would we do one with no public access?
Sometimes the landowner has absolutely no interest in that. And so it's, you have to weigh the pros and cons. If we really want the property, and it's just that's not something they're willing to entertain. I will say, you know, there's one, the one we acquired this year is with an HOA. Those are conversations, you know, perhaps we can have in the future as the underlying landowner changes, and that could be amended or modified.
I would think it would be rather interesting to try to find out if we could get a conservation easement on the edge of someone's property where it's not really much of a problem to build trails without having to buy it.
Yeah, but it's their tax decision.
Yeah. Yeah, so it would be basically an income gift.
Because the levels of restriction vary so much, but a lot comes down to the individual property owner.
Yeah, yeah.
Whether you allow recreational or not, it's a good example.
Yeah, so we always, you know, we give landowners options when we're looking to acquire property, and fee is always our preference first.
Yeah.
But sometimes in order to protect something, we have to work within what the owner's willing to do.
Right.
But like I said, a lot of ours are, the majority are more typical park type conservation easements where they allow public access, they allow trails, they allow management activities for natural resources. So yeah, there's a whole host of options. Okay, and then lastly, you know, as I mentioned, we often acquire properties that are already encumbered with issues and easements and that type of thing that we evaluate as we acquire property. Oil and gas wells is often one of those. So there are about 200 oil and gas wells across Cleveland Metro Parks. Only about 25 are active, and then those remaining are either abandoned or orphaned. Some are plugged, some are not. So we did work with ODNR between 2022 and 2024 to look at, of these wells, are there some problematic ones out there that could be causing, you know, potential harm to public health or natural resources? And there was some funding available through ODNR in the state of Ohio to work towards some of those problem wells. So this is just a quick summary of some of the stewardship work we do. We were able to plug 11 orphan wells, and this is just kind of pictured through the process here. That really improves our natural resources, public health, that type of thing. So that's all I have today. If you guys have any questions, happy to take them.
Very interesting.
Thank you. That was awesome.
Again, huge kudos goes out to the real estate team, the amount of complex issues that they handle and the stewardship and the general. It's a very unique job.
Oh, it's fascinating.
So we appreciate and applaud their efforts. There is no old business. The next regularly scheduled meeting is Thursday, April 17th at 8 a.m. There is no executive session.
We adjourned?
Is there a motion to adjourn?
So moved.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.